Not all of our minisodes need to be from listeners. In fact, places or lesser-known cases can sometimes take us to dark realms. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another installment of Dark Realms. Now, of course, at your suggestion, we gave people the choice whether we made the minisodes bi-weekly or indeed Dark Realms bi-weekly, for the simple reason you were becoming slightly oversaturated with content. And I know, as a consumer of podcasts, if I feel too far behind in one of them, I'm going to walk away. There's too much to catch up with. Hence the reason to shorten two things from season 24 onwards, one being the number of episodes you receive, and two, the number of adverts before the main episode of The Dark Paranormal. And yes, anyone listening to seasons prior to the newest season will still hear the same amount of old adverts that were there. And that too will happen to season 24 when season 25 arrives. Because it's to us in the past tense, and to, of course, ad revenue, living in the real world and not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes, it helps to sustain the show. So once a new season starts, we give it the shorter advert sequence at the start, so for the full season you can get right to the story. You'll have noted in our last episode, all of our shout-outs were placed at the end of the episode, for the same reason. And that's something we're going to do going forward. Because if you guys wanted to be patrons, you would be patrons. That information at the start may as well be served at the end, because the information is still there for you to get, if you wish, and you're into the story much, much quicker. Of course, that information only stands for the Dark Paranormal main episode, so I'll tell you right now, if you wish to become a patron, and believe me, I would if I was not the host, the information's in the show notes, as is the information to submit your own experience. The only thing I ask of any listener, and simply because it's free, it's quick, and you can do it right now within 5 seconds, is subscribe to the show. And even though it would help the show massively and I'd be forever in your debt, none of this is why we're here. We're here to discuss a dark realm. And the dark realm in question, we have a listener by the name of Devontae to thank for. Because today's dark realm is the Natchez Trace Parkway. There are roads that connect places, and roads that seem to remember what moved across them. Natchez Trace Parkway is very much the second kind. For modern travelers, it links Nashville and Natchez, briefly crossing Alabama. But that paved road is only the latest surface on top of something far, far older. Far older and far more eerie than your average traveler may realize. The National Park Service describes it as a 444-mile route following a corridor used for roughly 10,000 years by the native peoples. Later by Cantooks, settlers, slave traders, soldiers, and future presidents. In 1810 alone, more than 10,000 of those Cantooks are estimated to have walked the old trace north after selling their goods in Natchez, a journey of about 500 miles that commonly took more than a month if on foot. And that simple fact matters. Because ghost stories along the trace didn't bloom in a vacuum. They grew in the long shadows of exhaustion, of theft, ambush, betrayal, and death. Modern writers and local historians still note that the road's older reputation was so violent that it earned the name the Devil's Backbone. A route where men with money in their pockets could vanish into, say, the swamps or the pines, never to walk out again. In other words, the trace did not need the supernatural in order to feel haunted. History supplied enough darkness. Folklore merely gave it a voice. What follows, as usual, arranged from the devil's backbone in ascending fear order, according to myself at least. So we'll begin with arguably, in my book at least, the mildest of the three tales, though perhaps one of the most unnerving in its restraint. And this tale is around the infamous witch dance. The Park Service treats the site carefully and plainly. It's a real stop at milepost 233.2. Today used for picnics and trail access, but it's also steeped in local folklore. Legend says witches or ritual practitioners would gather at this spot to perform those very rituals or practices, and the ground where their feet struck during their ceremonies withered. Grass would not grow there again. The important word in the official description is folklore. No ranger text, no claims of proof, yet this legend remains seemingly passed on vocally from generation to generation, and these things linger for a reason. The legend remains attached to the place so stubbornly that this little resting picnic area wears the name like a warning. Local retellings make the story darker, added details that students of the paranormal always listen for. Drums on full moon nights, chanting in the trees, laughter in the brush. And those bare patches of earth treated not as botany, but as residue. One widely repeated version says locals avoid stepping on the dead-looking ground for fear that evil will follow them home. This is what makes Witch Dance effective as our first tale in this podcast. There's no corpse to point at, no signed confessions, no resolved or written crime or history. Only a place, a name, and apparently a piece of land that seems to say, something happened here that I do not forgive. Even modern accounts, though wholly unverified, fall into the old pattern of interruption. One contemporary online recollection from a driver passing the site after dark sees the witness saying that just after discussing the law, a loud bang came from the back of their car, as if someone had slapped their boot hard whilst they were still moving at speed. Now that's not proof, it's an anecdote, and it should be treated as an anecdote. But in the paranormal world of this particular area, the value of these stories only further strengthen the reputation of this very place. Intrusion, trespass, the sense of having said the wrong name in the wrong place. Witch dance is frightening. Witch dance is frightening. Not because it proves witchcraft, but because it never quite lets the listener dismiss it. For our second tale, it belongs to Joseph Thomas Hare. And here the road grows much bloodier. Hare was one of the outlaws associated with the Natchez Trace's violent years. And in Trace folklore, he's sometimes described as connected to the route's first ghost. An official Natchez Trace social history post recounts the legend that Hare, after terrorizing travelers, became haunted by an apparition, a phantom white horse. Later regional summaries repeated the same core idea. Before his execution in 1818, he was said to speak of ghosts he'd seen on the trace, and afterwards local began attaching his own restless spirit to the Natchez riverfront as well. Now, the reason his story bites so deeply is that Hare is not merely seen by later witnesses. He is himself a witness. In a later printed recollection of his life, he remembers one encounter in these words. I saw standing across the road a beautiful white horse, as white as snow. This admission matters because it comes from a man who has no sentimental reasons or is no dreamer and certainly no innocent victim. In another later retelling of the same tradition, Har came to believe that this white horse was a warning of his impending judgment, even as a sign of Christ himself, sent to terrify him into repentance. Whether one reads the horse as an omen, a guilt made visible, or folklore grafted onto a criminal's life, the psychological shape is the same. The hunter suddenly realizes he is being hunted.
Okay, guys, I need to talk to you about money. Why? Well, it's high on my agenda at the moment as I'm looking to move not just house, but country. So I have a money goal that I'm really striving to achieve. And let's just say, to say I've got some way to go is an understatement. But I'm trying not to fixate on where my money is now, because so many people are focused on where their money is today. Acorns is the financial wellness app that cares about where your money's going tomorrow. And something I think is wonderful that Acorns have is the Acorns Potential Screen, so you can find out what your money is capable of. You guys know I've worked with Acorns for a while, and the reason I love working with them is because they take away the scare factor from investing. But in reality, investment and investing should mean the same for one person as it does for the next. Acorns is a smart way to give your money a chance to grow. It's easy. You can sign up in minutes and start automatically investing your spare money, even if all you've got is spare change. Acorns is an all-in-one. No more finance apps cluttering up your phone. With Acorns, you can invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. Sign up now and Acorns will boost your new account with a $5 bonus investment. Join the over 14 million all-time customers who've already saved and invested over $27 billion with Acorns.
Paid on client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 2 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age, and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
For building to our final tale, the strongest historical fit is the King's Tavern. But that building makes the most sense only when seen beside the old river quarter of Natchez under the Hill Historic District. 19th century Natchez was, as one local history site puts it, a city with a split personality. A proper town on the bluff. An improper town. Under the Hill was one of the rowdiest ports on the Mississippi. Taverns, gambling halls, brothels lined the streets. Enslaved people were also sold there as well as elsewhere in Natchez. One traveller around 1820 called it the most licentious spot on the Mississippi River. Then the modern world began to hollow the place out. Rail traffic moved the commerce. The bridge built across the Mississippi in 1940 helped turn the quarter into a ghost town. By 1974, it was still remembered for squatters and chickens in the street. By the mid-70s, restoration and tourism had revived it. And today, the district is a riverfront zone of restaurants, bars, shops, and live entertainment, rather than vice dens and dueling rooms. Mississippi's official property file is cautious about the date of construction of the tavern, but they date it somewhere between 1795 and 1800. There's documented evidence that it was standing by 1805. What is solid is that the earliest property record for the present site reaches back to Spanish records in 1794, that Richard King acquired the lot in 1798, and that he was licensed to operate a public house there in 1799. We do know in the early 19th century it was a functioning tavern and stopping place for men returning up the trace. By the 1820s it became a private residence. In 1974 it was restored for commercial use, and by April 2026 it was once more being marketed as a historic property for sale. And at the time of recording, for the short sum of $440,000, this tavern could be yours. The mix of lives this building has built is enough to blur your eyes. But for now, and our final story, we're going to take a step into the King's Tavern. At the centre of the tavern legend stands Richard King's alleged mistress, usually called Madeline. In the best-known version, she was a tavern worker involved with King. King's wife discovered the affair and killed her. The National Trust preserves the broad shape of that story when making it clear it belongs to tradition, not proven court record. And that matters as usual with these dark realms, we're no longer on the firm road of deeds, licenses and documentation, we're in the flickier beyond realm. Yet the tale clings because it may have been true, it seems to have been true. It binds together sex, jealousy, frontier secrecy, and a house with enough age to hide, well, almost anything. The legend became blacker in the 20th century. Retellings say that renovation work in the 1930s uncovered three bodies and a jewel dagger hidden near or behind the grey fireplace. Accounts differ on the exact location, which is precisely the sort of discrepancy that haunts serious researchers and nourishes our ghost stories. Some versions identify the female remains as Madeline. Some refuse to guess. Either way, the discovery hardened rumour into something tactile. There is a difference between saying a woman may have been murdered and saying workmen opened old masonry and found death waiting within. From that point onward, the tavern's haunting was no longer only romantic, it was entombed in fact. You hear me often go on about validators, and when hearing and reading some of the accounts of the modern-day hauntings of this tavern, there are plenty of validators there. The reason I say validators is because they are domestic. They're not thunderbolts, they're not some grand apparitions in the moonlight. They're a baby crying in an empty room. Strange faces appearing in windows and mirrors. Sensations of being pushed, hair being tugged. One diner, trying to laugh it off, wrote after a meal that either there's some crazy carbonation in this drink or this place is genuinely haunted. That would be a light line anywhere else. Here, it lands badly. Or, for our case, perfectly. Because this is the same house where, for years, patrons have linked unexplained accounts to a woman who may never have been properly accounted for, and to a child cry legend attached to the building's violent folklore. A haunting becomes far worse when it can move from melodrama to absurdity and back again in a single heartbeat. And that is why I would end on King's Tavern. Witch dance offered us dread without a body. Hair offers the criminal mind attacked by an omen. The tavern gives us the full thing. A city born in trade, a riverfront steeped in vice, a building with disputed origins and a hidden death or deaths. And arguably most importantly, a house whose surviving stories are intimate rather than theatrical. And so, as we draw this dark realm to a close, and again a big thanks to Devonte for suggesting it, I suggest we begin a GoFundMe to purchase this property as the Dark Paranormal. What do you say? I'm of course joking. But I want to thank each and every one of you, and again Devonte, for joining me on this episode. It, for me, was a fantastic look through history. I love it when I can also be educated as well as gripped by paranormal tales. And this research I've had to do has ticked all of those boxes. So again, a huge thank you to Devonte. Now, if you have your own suggestion for a dark realm, you can go to our website or go to the show notes. And where it says submit my experience, use that same link to just say, Kev has a suggestion for Dark Realms. And in the show notes again, you'll find the link to join our Patreon. And I will keep it simple and clear. For me, I think it's the best place for the paranormal in terms of community and spirit online anywhere, having been someone finding that or trying to find that for the last 30 years. Plus, aside from becoming a member of that community, if you come in at one of the three levels, if you come in at the first level, you get ad-free access. Second level, you gain early ad-free access. That's both with series finales and debuts. And at the third level, you gain all of that plus two additional at least 30-minute shows each and every week of the year, even on the downtime between seasons. One is Dark Bites, which you've heard about, and a back catalogue of over 200 hours of Dark Bites shows, which are Patreon-only stories that have been told direct to them that are too short to fit anywhere else. The other is a new show, After Dark, where I stare at a camera for 30 minutes unedited and give my genuine thoughts on what we've discussed in the week prior. So again, to join that if you wish, the link is in the show notes. But a huge thank you to you all for joining me on this fantastic, for me, look down America's deepest, darkest history. So thanks again to Devontae. Thank you to you all. And I'll speak to you again shortly. But for now, stay safe and goodbye.